Radio Boston, I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. As election season enters its final week, many of the state's major races are still too close to call. In the governor's race, a 12-year-old memo written by Republican candidate Charlie Baker went public today and immediately became a political football. Governor Deval Patrick says the memo makes Baker look bad. Baker says the memo shows he's the best man to elect. Meanwhile, a new poll shows Patrick leading slightly in the governor's race. And tonight, the four gubernatorial candidates will debate for the final time. The Democratic candidates in the closely watched 4th and 10th congressional races also have leads in recent polls. But Republican voters are still hoping for a slew of Republican wins in Massachusetts. Here to discuss all that election news and more is our political team. Jack Clancy is our Republican analyst. Jack, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hi, Sasha.
And former State Representative Susan Tracy is our Democratic analyst. Susan, thanks to you, too, for being
back.
Thanks. Listeners, we're taking calls. The election is just over a week away. We want to know if you've made up your mind on any or all of these races and ballot questions. We want to know if you're planning to watch the debate tonight. And if so, what you want to see from the candidates. Is there anything they can do that would make a difference for you? Do you think Charlie Baker should keep standing by Jeff Perry? Or do you think the strip search controversy is just old news? Jack, we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack and Susan, let's start off with this memo I referenced earlier. This was obtained by the Associated Press. It's a 1988 memo. It was written when Charlie Baker was in charge of Big Dig finances for the state, and he wrote this memo to the file. It says that he believed that the Big Dig financing plan was, in his words, starting to seem surreal. He also wrote that the rate of spending was simply amazing. And he said that draconian measures were going to be needed to deal with the transportation spending plan. Now, he actually proposed some ways that could help the situation, but he also proposed that they not be addressed until after that year's election, meaning in his hope, presumably, after his boss, Governor Paul Cellucci, was reelected. Now, Governor Deval Patrick has been frequently criticizing Baker's Big Dig role during this campaign. He immediately jumped on that memo, and he spoke to WBUR this morning, and this is what he said.
It's clear that Charlie Baker knew that the financing plan he put in place for the Big Dig was already in deficit before he'd even walked out of the office. And it's also clear that he undertook to hide that problem from the public until after the election that year. And I think on both fronts, that's troubling.
Now, Charlie Baker's campaign has a totally different take on this. They say it shows that Charlie Baker was honest and saw the issues at hand and was public about them, and that it shows responsible fiscal planning. So, Jack and Susan, let's talk about who's right. Jack, what's your take on this?
I do have to side with the Baker campaign clearly on this one. When I read this morning, I have to tell you, I said, how is this a story? How does it harm Charlie Baker, truly? I think it's kind of thin gruel for a news story, frankly. I think you want your chief of finance to make aware, blow the whistle on what's going on. This memo clearly said, yes, these figures are surreal. The pricing is amazing. Charlie Baker wasn't building the Big Dig. Charlie Baker was financing parts of it. It's Matt Amarello, it's Frank Salvucci, it's the other directors along with the directors of transportation who decided where the Big Dig was going and how it was going to grow. And it grew tremendously.
But Jack, the memo, of course, also says, although there are some solutions I have to suggest, let's wait to institute those solutions until after our boss presumably is elected. Is that a liability for Charlie Baker?
Charlie Baker did have four remedies that he mentions. And here's a memo again that talks about remedies. And yes, he said wait until after the election. I think Charlie Baker might point to Deval Patrick and say, it looks to me like you're not going to tell us what the deficit is for next year until December. You're saving that till after the election. That normally comes out before this time.
Susan Tracy, do you have a different take on this?
Of course, yeah.
You're the Democrat, of course.
Yeah, I mean, that's great spin on the Republican part. But let's face it, the Republicans had been in power since 1990. They were elected since 1991. So for 7 years on their watch, the Big Dig is deeper and deeper into the hole. Year 7 or 8 of the administration, just before the election, they say, you know, wow, this thing's out of control. I want to ask, well, who was paying attention? And, you know, how did it get to this level with the end of the second term of an administration? Why are we waiting till after the election to, you know, tell people the truth. And they're proposing remedies that, you know, they're criticizing Deval Patrick for having to institute. So, you know, we put off debt for the next generation and the next administrations. We waited until after the election to do it. And the debt all happened in the 7 years of your watch. I think it's a defensive place, and I don't want to be in it if I'm Charlie Baker.
The line in which he says in the memo, which I have in front of me, about the rate of spending being simply amazing, he actually provides an analogy that I think is helpful to try to make sense of these large numbers. He says that the rate of spending was virtually twice the size of the entire Commonwealth capital budget through FY 2001. Mm-hmm. So it creates a sense of scale. Mm-hmm. Susan?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, kind of one of the defenses that the Baker campaign makes is, well, we didn't start the big dig. This started before our watch. But again, this is 1998 you're talking about. Bill Weld was elected in November of 1990 and sworn in January of 91. That's a long time for it to be on their watch that that was happening. So it's hard to kind of fluff it off as it didn't happen on my watch.
And Jack Clancy, another piece of this is that the spending was just pushed off into the future, and that had the effect of starving road and bridge projects down the line, that it was going to have ripple effects for years to come. Absolutely.
But again, let's talk about Charlie Baker's role in this. He mentions in the memo all of the data that you mentioned. How does this make him a bad person if he points out all of these failures, all of these cost overruns? He can't go out there and pick up a pickaxe and change the way that thing is being built. He can only try to finance it properly.
We have a caller from Waltham who wants to weigh in on this, and this is Mark. And Mark, what do you make of this new memo that became public today?
Well, I believe Charlie Baker is culpable in the sense that you mentioned that both Governor Weld and Governor Cellucci at the time had this knowledge, and particularly Governor Cellucci, and neither said anything to the state. Charlie Baker could have presented the facts and left it up to Governor Cellucci to announce it or not announce it, but in fact, he specifically told him to put it off until after the election. I mean, what is the reason for that? Purely innocent reasons to put it off until after the election? There was an obvious reason. He knew that it was a problem, and he wanted to avoid facing it at that point for a specific political reason.
Mark, thank you for that comment. Jack Clancy, anything you want to add based on that caller's comment?
No, I think the caller's right. I mean, it was a political decision for sure. But he did have remedies that wanted to reallocate where monies were being spent and how, and they would have to come out afterward indeed. I think everybody knew that big dig was planned to be $2.5 billion. By that time, it had already been between, depending on who numbers you believe, $7.5 and $11 billion. That was way out of control already, and everyone knew it.
There's another gubernatorial debate tonight, which will be the final debate before next week's election. It's hard to imagine this big dig issue, this big dig memo, not coming up during the debate. But most likely also there'll be talk about jobs, which has obviously been a major issue in this election season. There are final job figures recently coming out that show that the unemployment rate in the state dropped from 8.8% to 8.4%. So that's good. At the same time, according to a different set of figures, the state lost 21,000 jobs, perhaps because people got depressed and stopped looking. Now, both you can look at these numbers in two ways. You can say they're good. You can say they're bad. Jack, who do you think these figures help in the governor's race?
Anytime you see a number drop, I think the general person who may not look into the details is going to say, oh, great, we're on our way. They may not see that same number that you just mentioned, the 21,000. The point is 8.4 puts you at 25th in the nation. As of yesterday, I looked it up, 24 states have a better unemployment rate than Massachusetts. In New England, New Hampshire has 5.4, Vermont 5.6, Maine 7.7. How can we be leading the country out of the recession if we're the worst in New England right now?
Susan Tracy?
Well, I think that I agree that you don't want to see job losses happen. So if I'm Deval Patrick, I was not happy about those numbers, even though the unemployment numbers look good. I think you have to look at it not just month by month, though, and look at it across the board over. I believe the last 6 to 8 months, we have seen steady growth in jobs in our economy. You know, as the governor would say, we're number one in the country in education. We've got health care coverage for everybody. So I think there's just a lot of good stuff going on. And I think in general, people feel like at least maybe there's, you know, we're kind of coming out of this. And I think that the governor's done a good job on that.
Listeners, we want to hear what you think about all of this. We're talking about the governor's race, of course. Later, we'll be talking about the 10th District Congressional race with Jeff Perry and Bill Keating. We'll be talking about the Barney Frank, Sean Bealot race. There's a lot of election news. We want to know if you're interested in this race, if you're planning to vote next week, who you're planning to vote for. Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack Clancy and Susan Tracy, there are yet more recent polls in this race. There's a Boston Globe poll that was released yesterday that has Patrick with a small lead over Baker. Now, most of these are within the margin of error, so we can't be confident about claiming that Patrick is that far ahead. But it says Deval Patrick is at about 43%, Charlie Baker at 39%, Tim Cahill way behind at 8%, and Jill Stein at the bottom at 2%. Susan, do you think that this 4-point lead that Deval Patrick has over Charlie Baker is significant? How in the clear do you think he is with that kind of number?
Well, I don't think anybody's in the clear this year, and I think, you know, everyone would agree on that. However, I think every independent poll that I have seen over the past 6 months has shown Deval Patrick in the lead. I cannot recall a single independent poll that has shown Charlie Baker in the lead. And I think that that's, you know, a good sign. I think there's a lot of work to do between now and 8 o'clock next Tuesday. But I think that most indications are that, you know, people are generally happy with the governor.
Jack Clancy, one hope all along for Charlie Baker is he can keep pulling voters away from Tim Cahill. And as things have gotten uglier between Cahill and Baker over the past week, it's been unclear which way voters would go. Do you think he still has a shot of pulling over enough former Cahill supporters that he can really close that lead that he has, where he's falling behind now with Patrick?
I think we talked about this before, but I think, yes, indeed, as you get closer to the election day, people want to cast a vote that at least counts. I think votes that you might cast that don't count might go for a far left candidate, maybe like a Jill Stein. People will stick by that number, I think.
You think many people may be looking at a vote for Cahill as a vote that doesn't count, and they think let's not waste it.
Well, sure, it's 8%, and let's be honest here. Right. And in this poll, if there were anything positive in it all for Charlie Baker, it was that it was proven in this case that by a margin of 2-1 that he would indeed be drawing away votes from Charlie Baker. So if it does happen, if Cahill's numbers shrink, as I think they might, it should improve for Baker. The problem for Baker right now is this 4% is a big number, and it's big not because it's such a huge number in and of itself. It's that since the end of July, these numbers have been 4, 5, 6, and 7%, and they've stayed steady. And that's the difficulty for Charlie Baker, is that there really hasn't. Each of the two times that you thought he was going to go somewhere, we had the Lascoco issue, and then, of course, the Lisa Allen statement last week. Obviously, Charlie stands to be stung by that a bit, I think.
Let's talk about a different poll, not over candidates, but over something that some people are calling the enthusiasm gap. This is the idea that Democrats are really down in the dumps this election season, feeling kind of depressed. Republicans are very, very fired up. A Globe poll showed that 76% of likely Republican voters are excited about this election, whereas 43% of voters who say they are Democrats are depressed about the election. There was a New York Times story, I think today, about the Bill Keating-Jeff Perry race, and they quoted a woman in Duxbury who runs a small financial consulting firm with her husband, and she said, "It has become fun to be a Republican. We have a small business, and we used to be afraid would turn people off if they knew," meaning if they knew we were Republicans. She says, "It's liberating." So, Jack, first of all, just give us the basics. Why do Republicans have so much reason to be excited right now?
A lot of people are calling this midterm election a wave election, maybe driven by the Tea Party, bad economy, and so on. And while we are the bluest of blue states, voted for McGovern in 72, the wave is kind of hitting our shores at more like a trickle. So it's going to be difficult. It causes enthusiasm for Republicans, but it's not going to be like it is in the Midwest and other areas of the country in terms of its impact. We may still send 10 Democrats to Congress. I think that's a real likelihood.
But Republicans are still excited about Scott Brown having won, about the Perry Keating race having been closer than you might expect.
Sure, absolutely.
Sean Bealot giving Bernie Frank a run
absolutely.
For his money.
Scott Brown really energized the Republicans, no doubt. I mean, they changed the numbers from 100% senators to 50% in one vote. Hey, that's a big move. And I think the numbers, early numbers, looked good. And in some of these other congressional races, it looks like there may be some battles where there never were before. And that's encouraging.
And Susan Tracy, you're a Democratic analyst. Why are Democrats depressed?
Well, you know, I think back to 2 years ago when the Obama presidency was happening. And I think of that election cycle. And I think those numbers were probably 73% excitement on the Democratic side and 43%, whatever it was, depressed on the Republican side. So I think these things go in waves. And I do think, you know, the Republicans are excited. I think you're right. You know, it's like they're coming out here. They're like, you know, excited to be able to say who they are. You know, I'm still hopeful that the Democrats will get enough enthusiasm next Tuesday to get out and vote.
But Susan, is the concern that if they don't get enough enthusiasm, they actually will not bother voting? Is that a real concern?
Absolutely. It's critical that the Democratic Party has a good ground game. You know, that they really have a strong GOTV effort, that they're out there knocking on the doors, they're doing the rides to the polls, and they're, you know, they're getting their vote out. Yes, I think the work is harder on our side.
Jack, you want to add something?
And again, back to that other poll, one other small nugget in there, if you look deep into that poll, is when they said the voters who said they were going to vote for Patrick and Baker, would you be willing, might you change your vote? Twice as many of the Patrick voters as opposed to the Baker voters said they might. And so there's a possibility, if there is indeed an enthusiasm gap, that these folks might not show up.
Listeners, we're having our political roundtable with Republican analyst Jack Clancy and Democratic analyst Susan Tracy. We're going to be moving on soon to some congressional races, Jeff Perry and Bill Keating in the 10th District. We want to know what you think about that and this Cranberry Bog strip search that's been such a central part of that campaign. We'll also be talking about the Sean Bealot-Barney Frank race. We're wondering if you've seen the online video that Bealot has put out that shows a Barney Frank dancing and looking silly, and whether that interested you or whether that turned you off. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jack Clancy and Susan Tracy, as we've said, there's a final gubernatorial debate tonight. Every week when you come in, I ask you, what do you think the candidates have to do to try to make a difference in the time left? And I want to ask you again, because it's only 1 week, and I wonder if you think they can really do anything tonight or say anything tonight that could change the way voters feel at this point. Susan, why don't we start with you?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with Patrick, say.
You know, for Governor Patrick, I think, you know, his likability numbers in that poll were really high. I think he's got to continue to do that. I always feel like he's a very compassionate person. He listens really well. And I think he's done a good job and needs to continue to do a good job at communicating. Worst times that we've ever known. I've been a steady hand. I've done a good job. I've kept our state strong through it. And I'm empathetic to you.
So
he's great at it.
Keep doing what he's doing in terms of that kind of presentation.
I think if you're up in every poll that's taken, I think you got to keep doing what you're doing.
So you're the Democratic analyst who just gave us your take on what the Democratic candidate should do. What do you think the Republican candidate should do?
You know, Charlie Baker, once again, I think the likability factor, again, is striking. I think those numbers for him in the poll were horrible. I think he always comes off kind of angry, petulant, and a little annoyed at these debates. His demeanor is as important as anything he can do tonight or say. I think people first have to like you before they're going to vote for you, and he just hasn't closed that with people. So demeanor, I think, is very important for him.
Jack Clancy, what do you think Charlie Baker has to do tonight?
Charlie Baker has to keep hammering the economy. He's got to talk about this unemployment rate I mentioned earlier that puts us in the middle of the pack. He's got to talk about the record foreclosures 5 months in a row, the looming $3 billion deficit. He's got to continue to hit the economy, and he's got to try to knock Deval Patrick off his game a little bit. In the debates that I've seen, Deval Patrick is very glib, very smooth, and hard to knock off his game. I did see him get a little flustered at one point, and Charlie's got to find a way to get the governor a little flustered. And that may be by pressing some issues a little harder than he has. I have to agree completely with Susan, though. He has to find a way to do that without seeming strident in doing so.
And do you think he really needs to change his demeanor in a way that makes him seem softer and friendlier and warmer?
Absolutely. Deval is cuddly, and Charlie's not.
Yes. Do you think Charlie can do that, if it's basically who he is?
You know, I've talked to some people about Charlie Baker, and they say as a person outside the campaign, he's a really quite a sweet guy, a nice guy. I think he's so flustered with the things, the points that he wants to get out and that aren't getting traction, let's say, that I think he's upset that people aren't paying more attention to things, and so he feels he has to drive things home harder himself. Mm-hmm. Saying things louder and meaner don't make them come out any better, and I think that's maybe something he's got to be careful of.
Let's talk about the 10th District race. Again, this is Democrat Bill Keating running against Republican Jeff Perry. the seven-term incumbent, Bill Delahunt, is retiring. That's what opened up the seat. Now, we've talked about this case before. We've talked about the Cranberry Bog strip search. Let's very briefly just review what that is. Early 1990s, Jeff Perry was a Wareham police sergeant. One of his subordinate officers illegally strip-searched a teenage girl. The issue was, did Perry see it happening and not do anything about it? Perry has variously said, I saw what happened and nothing illegal happened. He's also said, I didn't see, wasn't close enough to see. So that's been up for debate. Last week, the victim came forward and said Perry was close enough that he should have heard her screaming and crying, but that he did nothing. Here's what Charlie Baker had to say at a rally Saturday where Jeff Perry was also in attendance. And this is from New England Cable News.
I think Jeff is running for exactly the same reasons on the federal level I'm running on the state level.
Are you satisfied that he's answered the question?
I'm here to support the slate. I'm here to support all the candidates. I'm here to support Jeff. I'm here to support Jim.
Jack Clancy, do you think that Charlie Baker is making the right decision by standing, by continuing to stand by Jeff Perry?
Oh, that's so hard to answer. I don't know. I think it's possible that everybody's passed the window on this, including Jeff Perry, in terms of when he should have admitted what happened and said he was sorry that window closed long ago. It's possible it may have closed already for Charlie Baker. If he comes out now, he'd be claimed that he's throwing Perry under the bus if he leaves him at this point. I think the best thing he can do is just stay away from him like he's tried to do. He had to show up at the rally. It would have looked really bad. I don't know what he could have done better. I suppose he may have, you know, weeks ago he may have been able to get away from this. I don't think he can now.
Susan Tracy, assuming that you might say it might not have been a good move on Charlie Baker's part, Do you really think he had a choice?
You know, it's funny. I don't think he had a choice, but I think it's just another moment for Charlie Baker where he's on the defensive. He's on the defensive today on the Big Dig issue. He's on the defensive today about being with Perry. It struck me as funny. He stood with Lascoco. He stands with Perry. He didn't stand with Tom Riley. And it just struck me as, you know, the company he keeps is really killing him.
Let's go back to the Cranberry Bog issue, because Jeff Perry responded to allegations that victim who just came forward made on Friday. He was talking to Howie Carr on WRKO. And in this clip we're about to hear, he's talking about Scott Flanagan, who is the officer who was ultimately convicted for conducting illegal strip searches.
It's despicable what Flanagan did. He violated my trust. He violated the police trust. He did some very bad things. But that wasn't me. If I had seen it happen, if I had heard it happen, I would have stopped it. I would have locked him up myself. I feel really badly for the victim. She has my complete sympathy, but it wasn't me.
Jeff Perry has said over the course of this campaign that for Keating to keep focusing on this incident is dirty politics. But it appears that with this comment, Jeff Perry finally felt like he had to come forward and say something very strongly. Hmm. Did he have any choice? Did he have to realize this is not going away?
I think the window closed. I think he's probably at the point where he can only continue to deny. I mean, maybe it would work for him at this point to say, I did do that. I made horrible decisions. I wish I hadn't. I apologize. Maybe that would help him now. I don't know. It's so hard to say what would be right in this case. I do know that his body of work, including the issues regarding his diplomas and the bar, it just hasn't looked good for Jeff Perry.
Right, there are other character issues, as Keating calls them. Very briefly, Susan Tracy, a poll showed that Keating's up 37% to Perry's 33%. Do you think that tiny lead is due, if anything, to this one issue?
I think that, you know, as we all know, this was the district that the Republicans were going to take back. This is the district that Scott Brown won 60-40. The fact that this race is not only close, but has a slight Democratic lead, I really do attribute to this issue, and not just the incident itself, but the sort of the constant changing stories, the lack of, you know, candor, truthfulness, the sense that it's always too cute by half, I think it really does hurt you.
Let's talk about the 4th District. This is the congressional race between Barney Frank, who's been in there for a long time, and Republican Sean Bealott, who was previously a pretty much unknown Brookline man in his mid-30s, a Marine reservist. Latest polling says Frank has 46%, Bealott has 13%. So Frank ahead by 13 percentage points. I'm sorry, Frank up 43%. I'm sorry, Frank 46%, Bealott 33%. So that's a 13% lead for Frank. Now, that seems like a comfortable margin, but Frank just donated $200,000 of his own money to his campaign. Jack Clancy, do you think Bealott could actually win?
Oh, gosh. I guess anything could happen. We have a week. You know, we've had a month already of a few October surprises. None of them really have happened in this race. They seem to all have happened in the governor's race and maybe Tierney's race. But I guess if I were a betting man, I'd say no, 13 points is almost impossible. But again, Scott Bielout is making a name for himself, and he's making Barney at least a little nervous.
Last week here on Radio Boston, we talked about this new ad in the works that's now all over the Internet. This was put out by the Bielout campaign. It's a dancer in a fat suit, and on her body is superimposed Barney's face. So let's listen to that ad.
I'm sorry, can I finish the sentence?
On what planet do you spend most of your time?
I'm sorry, can I finish the sentence?
AIG. On what planet do you spend most of your time?
A bubble. I voted to raise the tax rate. I'm sorry, can I finish the sentence?
Unlike Barney, I don't need to dance around the issues. I'm Sean Bielout. I'm running for Congress, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Sean Bielout.
Jack Clancy, if nothing else, Sean Bielout is getting a lot of free publicity about this. The New York Times wrote about it last week. We had a Week in Review panel here last Friday in which someone said it's so out of character for Bielout's normal, not quite so aggressive approach. I wonder if you think there's a risk in this new edgier approach.
I'm not sure there's a risk at all when you're behind by 13 points. I must have seen the edited version. The one I saw, the character wasn't in a fat suit. He was in a suit, I think.
Maybe it's a suit, but it's meant to look very frumpy and overweight, basically.
All right. Well, that's certainly not Barney. in any event, I mean, Barney has a good sense of humor. He's probably had a giggle at this. I mean, he's got a big lead. Barney's been known to be a very funny guy. I don't think it's such a horrible thing.
Susan, what did you think when you saw this?
You know, I think humor is always dicey in a political campaign, but if you're going to do it, you should do it well. I have to say, I watched it a couple of times. I still don't really know the point, even though I guess it's, Barney dances around issues. The constant use of the term the bubble did nothing for me. So I felt like if you're going to be funny, you should be good at it. It should actually resonate with people and mean something. It was lost on me.
I left.
Thank you very much to both of you. Jack Clancy is our Republican analyst. Former State Representative Susan Tracy is our Democratic analyst. They've been our political roundtable for several weeks now. Thanks to both of you.
Sure. Thank you, Seth.
And stay tuned to WBUR tonight at 7 p.m. for live coverage and then post-debate analysis of the final gubernatorial debate. Also, tune in to Radio Boston all this week for conversations with all of the candidates for governor. They'll be taking your calls and questions. Tomorrow, it's incumbent Democrat Deval Patrick who'll be in the studio. If you want to submit questions in advance, call our listener line at 617-353-1137 or email your questions or comments to radioboston@wbur.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Coming up after a break, one local school is telling its teachers not to friend their students on Facebook. But does that preclude an increasingly common form of communication between teachers and students?
We can't email them because who uses email anymore? So Facebook's easiest.
More after a break. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.